You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
B105.
From the front yard to the backyard, it's time for In and Around the House on B105.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House, and a big Merry Christmas to everyone. We're just a few days away from the big day, and yesterday was the shortest day of the year. So,
Thank goodness.
Boy, we've come a long way. 2018 has flown by. Tony Works, your host of In and Around the House here, and again, welcome. And Bob Bard is co-hosting the show with me again this morning. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, this is one of the greatest days of the year, because from here on out, every day gets a little longer.
Ooh, I like that.
We got six months of days getting longer.
I'm stoked. I'm right now. I know we're in the midst of the Christmas season, but I'm just thinking about next spring.
Oh,
the things that we can do, the new plant introductions. I don't know. I always get juiced up and excited about the upcoming season, and then once I get into it, it's like, oh, I can't wait to the next one.
You ever find yourself
doing that?
You're always looking forward to the next thing. You kind of sometimes forget to stop and enjoy it.
Maybe. So are you ready for Christmas? Have you purchased all your gifts?
You know what? I've done good. I really have done good with my shopping this year. I was in and out. I was, finding all kinds of deals here.
For some reason, it does feel, when it's something like that dips that far south, it feels a lot cooler down there for whatever reason.
Yeah, 55 down there feels cold.
Yeah.
And if we had 55 when they did, we'd be in t-shirts.
All right, tank top, planting something.
What do you think? You're that way anyway. You're in shorts and a t-shirt anyway.
Before we went into the break, I thought it was really comical the other day in a funny way when you stopped at the garden center and we were talking about discussing some of today's show, and you go, hey, man, have you really noticed how people trim up their boxwoods and all this and all that, but they don't touch the junipers?
Did you start looking?
Oh, I haven't had time. Well, there was so much traffic yesterday when I was out and
you
about.
You were paying attention.
I had to pay attention to what was going on in front of me.
So
tell me. I swear I got the biggest chuckle when you were talking about that, because it reminded me of something else, and we'll come to this in a second. But when you were talking about that, how people will trim up their boxwoods and other stuff, they'll just allow it to go and get crazy. But what it kind of reminded me of, people always will come into the garden center and say, we need conifers or we need evergreens. I see the foundation of my house and all that stuff. And that makes me kind of laugh too, because never have I really been out and about with Tina in the car with me and pointed out someone's house and say, I see too much foundation. They need some evergreens. Do you do that? You know what I'm saying?
I don't. Most people know, but like on a side of a house that maybe has a walkout.
Yeah.
Where 8 feet of the concrete foundation is showing.
Mm-hmm.
I notice it. But as a guy who designs landscaping and what we want to camouflage and what we want to accentuate. That's not the right word.
Accentuate.
Thank you. I was tongue twisted there.
That's okay. It happens.
But, when we're trying to pull out the best features of the house, the concrete foundation is not one of them.
No, I get it. I get it.
And there are some big foundations that,
Yeah, it's like cardboard. It's like blah. It's not interesting. But it reminded me of that. But never have I really said to Tina or anybody, they need some foundation plantings. They need to hide that concrete wall.
It does bother some people, though.
But, I do notice those things, but it doesn't really bother me. And I was getting a chuckle out of what you brought up to.
What brought it up was.
Yeah, go fill us in.
So, I'm driving around, and I drive a lot every year. So, being in the landscape business, and anybody who's doing landscaping, you tend to notice other landscapes of other houses if you're doing your own.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when you get a new car, all of a sudden you start seeing, wait a minute, I didn't realize there's so many of those models already out there. So I'm looking at evergreens, and I'm noticing everybody's got their boxwoods and their taxis. They're all manicured. They're nice and round. Everything's perfect. And then you look over at the gray owl junipers or the gold mop cypresses or the sea green junipers,
mm-hmm.
and they're just everywhere. It's what? like They don't want to trim them.
Well, wait a minute. Why do you think that is? Do you, you know, perhaps, you know, it's easy to trim a boxwood because most people have seen it done on TV, somebody using hedge shears and all that good stuff, which I don't like to use on boxwoods.
It tears them up a little bit.
It tears them up.
But it can be done. If your blades are sharp, you're fine.
It can be done, but, you know, that's the English way of keeping that well-manicured English garden look, you know, the pyramids.
Very manicured.
Yeah, manicured. But, you know, I think people are intimidated when it comes to pruning some conifers and so forth, evergreens. And, you know, I think selectively pruning those is best suited, getting down in there deep. And then I like to start down in that plant deep, not heavy, and then work my way out.
Right.
And then tip a little bit of the outer part of it. But I think, you know, that gets a little, I think it's confusing for a lot of people when you talk about pruning.
It is, especially on the ones that the evergreens kind of stretch.
Right.
So let's take a gray al juniper.
Right.
Okay. It's kind of a bluish gray, 3 feet tall, can be a little lower, a little taller. But they tend to shoot their branches, you know, kind of spread out.
More horizontal.
More horizontal. And there's gaps between there. You know, there's a lot of gaps. It's not like a boxwood where it's really tight, you know, and a lot of it's trimming. But I don't think people don't realize that they can get in there with a set of hand pruners and take off some big branches and allow some of that inner growth to kind of grow out beyond where they have trimmed and kind of camouflage the big branch.
Right.
And it still gives it that soft, feathery look that people like, but it's also manicured. And right. I think people struggle with that.
I think the real advantageous approach to that, what you're saying, is that you're also allowing and getting more light down into it.
Sure.
Which is, you know, you get better air circulation. And more light down in there, you'll get that continued growth down within it to a degree for the most part.
It absolutely is true. And your junipers and those type cedars and cypresses, those type evergreens look better when they're trimmed up and manicured. They don't have to be perfectly tight like a boxwood where it's a round ball or a perfect square. They don't need to do that. They could still have some free flow to them or, you know, and they can have a little bit of wildness, so to speak.
Well, let me ask you this. Where are you from the standpoint, let's just say that, you know, let's take the sea green juniper, you know, it's got that horizontal spread to it.
Can get really big if you don't trim.
Absolutely. So if it's in the right space or the right area where it can grow and do what it wants to do, is pruning necessary from your standpoint?
Absolutely. I think you absolutely should prune every plant.
For what reason?
It just keeps a better shape, keeps healthy foliage.
Okay.
Manicured look. I think the overall impression of the plant just makes a better look. And so that's the main reason to do it.
And, you know, and I agree with that, but there's times, too, I just like to let a plant do what it's capable of doing, what it's supposed to do. And if it has the space to do it, I'm all in. I'm like, do your thing.
Well, you know, let's say you take that, say, sea green juniper, and you put it on the edge of the woods where it's getting plenty of light, but you want, like, a real natural barrier. If you leave that, though, you're still going to have big gaps you look through.
Mm-hmm.
When the snow comes and sits on it, you're more likely to have broken branches, things like that. So we want to eliminate some
of that
stuff.
That's what I'm trying to get out of you there, Bobby.
There you
you're
go.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's a lot of times, too, that comes into play or thought when we're talking about arborvitae and we're talking about the emerald green, how it doesn't really have a true central leader.
Right.
And if they're close to the eaves of the house and you get a decent amount of snow or a load and how that slides off, you can set yourself up for some damage easily.
So, and those are going to be harder to trim than some of the
juniper. Right, that is very difficult
but,
to trim.
But, you know, there's one particular, and I'm not going to name them, but there was one particular place up by our store I was up. The sea green juniper was a disaster, and the boxwood are perfect. And they're right next to each other, and they're paying so-called company to come trim and manicure and take care of this place. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, why aren't they pruning?
Well, and where I'm agreeing with you on this issue in particular, is because if one outgrows the other one and takes over, you lose that beauty of the combination in the landscape.
Correct. That's where we're trying to get texture. Trying to get, you know, some more character. We're trying to get some different shades of greens, you know, all the things to create a great landscape. That's what we're trying to get at. And when you let one plant become the disaster, that's what sticks out. It's the sore thumb.
Got it. We got to take another quick break in and around the house with Tony Works. And again, Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is co-hosting the show with me.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And while we were in the break there, we just got a phone call. We have a gentleman on the line. Eric. Eric, good morning. Hey. How are you?
Hey, good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Good. Wonderful. I was calling first and foremost. Love the show.
Thank you.
I've listened to it for, I guess, about a month now. And so the question I've got for you is, while living in Georgia, Atlanta, I fell in love with a bush that we would prune up into a tree form. It was a tea olive tree. And I wanted to find out if I brought two tea olive trees up here, if they would live in the climate that's up here, or if they're better off just staying down there.
More so staying down there than up here. I've heard of this plant. I'm not very familiar with it. I know that it's very fragrant as far as that goes, and it's more of a southern grown plant, zone 7 through 10. And
we're a 6A.
We're a 6.
Yeah,
we roughly.
Are. Okay.
So what you're gonna have to do, you could probably get it. You could bring it up. You could enjoy it spring, summer, and fall. But for the winter, you're gonna have to be able to bring it indoors or somewhere where it's a little bit warmer. Because if we have our normal cooler winter, it will not survive the winter. Now, there are people who maybe have had one or two, a little bit of success trying to get them to survive up here. I think I do have one customer up in Anderson Township who has one of these, and it actually has survived. But it is, he wraps it in burlap. He puts all kinds of things on it to really help protect it. But it is really a zone 7, which I think that's Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee and South.
Tennessee and
part.
South
yeah.
is really where that would live just fine outdoors all the time.
You know, Eric, are you in transition moving up from the Atlanta area?
I am. That's correct.
You know, bring a couple and give us each one. We'll try it.
Merry Christmas.
We'll give it a shot.
Wow,
that's very interesting. Yeah, that'd be a great Christmas gift to Bob and myself. But, you might be able to pull that off. It's getting it planted early in the season so it can get rooted in, and it would probably behave a lot like a crepe myrtle, but probably a little bit more temperamental than a crepe. Some varieties anyway.
It will not grow as fast here as it did down in Atlanta because our growing season is so much shorter. So
right. You
might be able to get away for many, many years of putting it in a container and putting it maybe on the porch or on the patio. But honestly, I really think you're going to have to bring it in for the winter.
Okay.
Hey, Eric.
Is there anything that lives up here that would be similar in fragrance or similar but more hardy?
Ooh, the fragrance part, nothing comes
probably,
to mind.
No, you're going to be more with what we are. We get into tropicals. I mean, there are some fragrant flowering shrubs that we could definitely talk about, but I don't know if they're going to smell quite like that.
Is that almost like a jasmine fragrance? I was going to ask you that, Eric, because I've never really had the opportunity to enjoy the fragrance of the tea olive.
Yeah, it's like a sweet kind of smell, but it's just very fragrant, kind of like the jasmine. But I guess it's kind of unique in its own way. But it's really nice sitting out on the back patio and grilling out or just talking with friends and having that fragrance there around you. It's pretty nice.
Was it regularly available in the garden centers down in Atlanta? Is that where you would find
it? Yeah, a lot of times down there it's just sold in a bush form. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a specialty nursery, they'll have them where they'll already have them kind of limbed up to where they're forming into that tree form.
A tree form, right.
And, the ones that I've done in the past have been, probably 5.5-6 feet tall in height. And then they bush out really nice on the top. And then you just have that stalk coming straight down into either the ground or into a pot. So
interesting.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I would treat it like a tropical hibiscus and bring it in for the winter.
I think so too.
That's how I would treat it.
And the closest that we sell is probably going to be jasmine or gardenia.
Right. Jasmine or gardenia would be one of the something similar with a great fragrance, but those as well would be very difficult to get those to winter over.
It would.
But anyway, Eric, hey, thanks for calling in. Merry Christmas to you and your family. And hey, we're at 2060, is it Reading, right? 2060?
Reading Road.
Yeah, Reading Road.
You don't have to do that.
I'm just kidding you.
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him at all.
All right. Merry Christmas, Eric. And let us know what you do and how it goes. All right, buddy.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas.
That's
pretty cool.
That was an interesting question.
I'm not that
familiar with that plant, but...
I mess with the palm trees, you know, and I have to bring them in. They'll survive down... The ones I have, the Phoenix palm, will live down to about 25 degrees, but mine are in the greenhouse right now. And I also moved in some of my pots, and the lantana had survived outside the early cold. And you got to see them in the greenhouse, because the greenhouse I'm keeping at about 48 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gorgeous.
Oh, I have a hibiscus, you know, it comes in, it goes in and out of bloom.
Yeah.
It's easy to do. Well, absolutely. We're fortunate we have the indoor growing.
We're very lucky. What he was talking about with the tree olive, up here it's not going to be as big, because that can be a, certain varieties can get pretty big. But up here, he could probably put that in a pot and bring it in.
I'm confident he could still enjoy that, just like a Duranta that you would get from out of the south, you know, mm-hmm. and enjoy that tropical look. But hey, anyway, we've got to take another quick break. In and around the house with Tony Works. And when we come back, I still think you have another beef with some of those evergreens.
I have a little more therapy we have to go through.
That you might
tonight.
Have forgotten about.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Whenever I hear Elvis, it reminds me of the old days when I used to spend Christmas with the family at my Aunt Audrey's and Uncle Walt's house.
Were they good times?
Oh, great times. And we'll talk about that. That's a whole nother story. Because it was my mom's side of the family were Catholic, and my dad's side, Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
So totally two different family get-together.
Sure.
So I don't need to say anymore, but always a great time on both sides.
That sounds like my family.
And, that's what that Elvis song reminds me of. I almost put that CD on in the store the other day, Elvis Christmas. Yeah, that's a must have. So anyway, before we went into the break,
I'm not done with my therapy stuff.
I don't think you're finished, because there's still I see there's still some red in your cheeks and your neck, and you still have a lot more to add to the conifer world.
So
that's bugging you.
So we're going to go back to that sea green juniper. So besides not being trimmed ever, and I know it's been in for at least 5 years. So it's 6 feet tall. It's like 8 feet wide. It's never been trimmed. You can see through it. And here are these manicured boxwood right next to it that look great. What else? Bagworms hanging all over it.
Mm. That's not good, because there are a lot of eggs that are up and residing inside that bag, more than likely, that you will see next year.
And this particular company, I know, is paying another company to take care of their landscaping, because they're not in the landscaping business at all. They're in the food business. We'll just say that. We'll leave it there. So how do you see bagworms? And we're not talking about one or two. You know, you miss one or two. That happens.
Were you in drive-thru and saw all this?
No, I was actually not in the drive-thru. I was actually coming out of their parking lot.
Are you spying on somebody and you're
seeing all
this?
You can't miss it. I mean, you see a bag bagworms and you see thousands hanging on one bush. That's easy to see.
Well, you know, I think for the trained eye, it is. Do you think that other people, they might think that's part of it?
Well, the bagworm is an inch to an inch and a half long.
But
it's
it can
gray.
Kind of, but from a di- it could look like a little cone forming.
Yeah, I mean, if they had trimmed their bush and everything was really nice and tight and it was manicured and it looked really pretty and the sea green was a nice shape. But this thing's got these long branches, and you could see them just hanging from all over. It looked like.
No, you know what, Bob? I got one for you, brother. No juniper for you.
That's right.
You're the juniper Nazi.
Hey, I love juniper.
No juniper for you.
I like juniper. They're easy. They're low maintenance. If you trim them and do take care of the bagworms, they're easy to maintain. But I don't understand.
You know,
so, what should they do? So let's just say somebody else out there has the same problem that this place has. So what do you do?
I just simply pick them off.
At this time of year, it's easy to pick off. Just pick them off, because if you don't, they're like you said, there's thousands of them. There's thousands of them on there now.
They'll visit you again next year.
Oh, and
there'll
be more.
For sure.
There'll be more. The bush is going to be dead, because I guarantee you they're not going to trim it, and they're not maintaining this plant.
You know, something else that comes to mind when you talk about that kind of stuff, and I know it's really, you know, this time of year, those sacks more than likely, you know, not all of them. It just depends on which one the females were in and the males, but there's eggs, you know, and there's a lot of eggs.
That's a lot more bagworms.
Yes, and really treating them at this time of year, there's not a spray that you can use, and plus temperatures come into play, so it's just really...
Pick them off.
It's advantageous for you just to pick them off.
So if I was working for this company, and they had hired Bards to come in, I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to prune this plant. That's going to take off probably 50% of the bagworms from this particular bush. So, because I went and looked at it again the other day, because after I talked to you about it, I'm like, I'm going to inspect this a little bit closer without being the inspector Nazi.
Going to get out of my truck and looking at it.
I wasn't going to be Dr. Bob going to do all that. But you could trim off at least half of them. The bush would be much better shaped. And then when it flushes out in the spring, it's not going to look great because they haven't trimmed it for 5 years. But if they trim it now and then they get a flush in the spring, everything will be great. So to the homeowner, if you have them and you can get out and you can take care of it, and we're still going to have a few sunny, nice days to where maybe not warm, but warmer, get out there, pick them off, trim the bush up as much as you can to make it have some shape, and then wait for spring. And you will be amazed with sunlight getting into the inner branches, you know, with the new growth popping out, how much better that plant looks.
Now, do you feel better?
Yes.
I mean, I can see the red kind of subsiding. It's going away.
It's Christmas time. My face is red. That's what
it is. Now it's in the lining of your hoodie over there, the red.
I am passionate about plants.
And, you know, can I make a suggestion?
Sure. You're the doctor.
Do you have business cards?
I do.
Just walk in there and say, hey, I'm Bob from Bard's Nursery. And, you know, I'd like to talk to somebody about your landscape.
Can you imagine if I did that to everybody?
introduce yourself. I am also known, AKA, as the Juniper Nazi. No juniper for you.
I could do that.
You're killing me.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get some of your cards, Tony Works, and I'll be like, hey, this is the company I'm from. Your landscaping's bad. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't do that.
You're killing me. But I did. I got the biggest kick out of getting together with you the other day, and that was the first thing that you were honing in on.
Oh, so I appreciate you allowing me to do this, allow to lay down in the studio, you know, get through my therapy session.
You need a little intervention.
Yes,
and
we'll set something up for a couple weeks from now.
There's some people I can recommend.
Good, I need that.
Got it. And, you know, have you kind of taken a look at anything from the standpoint of how 2018 has kind of come to a head and what really did well, what didn't do well? Do you take any kind of notations as to what trended well this year, what didn't do well, what you would change? Or
I think you do that every time you do a landscape job. I mean, at least I do, because I go and I analyze what looks good, what doesn't look good, what could I have changed to make it a little bit better? Because anytime you take a design, no matter who does it, and then you take the paper, you lay it out, you look at it, and then you put it in play, and you do it around the house. Things change. There's no way to get it exactly the same.
Do you have a signature plant? I think you have one or two.
Oh, I've got multiple.
I could go by a residence and say, Bob Bard might have been here.
Yeah, you could definitely tell. There's a few things that I like.
Wait a minute. A blue spruce globosa.
Yeah.
Let's see here. What else do you like? You know, you like the red twig dogwood.
I don't use that a lot. That is only when...
What about the Weigelia? I know you talk about Weigelia. No?
Like sides of houses? Because, see, the Weigelia gets big and a little bit out of control. So I'll use that on hillsides, or I'll use that on sides of houses, but definitely not in the front.
I'm just trying to find out what your signature plant is. You know, it's almost like an artist or a painter.
Mm-hmm.
They always will stick something in that artwork that represents them.
My biggest thing, if you looked at a design done by Bob Bard, you're going to see multiple evergreen colors. Maybe some gold mops. It doesn't have to be gold mops, but you'll see gold evergreen.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see some blue evergreens. I try a lot with the landscaping, especially foundation, to create some winter interest. So even in the winter, it still looks really pretty, and then the color pops here and there.
And it's wintertime, and we have to take another quick break.
Already?
And share in our discussion. If there's some things you want to ask us or you want to bring to the table, or you have some questions about some things you might want to do in 2019 in and around the house or the landscape, 749-B105 is the number. And when we come back, I have some really interesting things I want to talk about, and you can touch on it with me. And those are 2019's gardening trends for the upcoming season. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House.
It's not that cold outside right now.
No.
It's like 34
it's
degrees,
nice
I think.
Outside.
35?
That
35.
It is.
Going to 43 today.
Was that a little
bit of mostly cloudy.
Was that little Dean right there? No. Yeah. What a classic. The old Rat Pack and those guys and the roast they used to have. Do you ever remember your parents or anybody watching those old shows?
No. Sorry.
Yeah, I could see Dean Martin up there with a highball, refreshment.
I'm a little bit younger than you, Tony.
And everybody smoked back then. Not that I'm promoting smoking.
Yeah, no. Because
I don't
do that.
Smoke. But it's just the way life was back then.
Yeah, life was, you know.
It was fun, and it just, people just did what they wanted to do and have a good time and were responsible
like
for the
though.
Most moment and for the most part. And,
yeah.
And
I like that song.
I do, too.
I know there's a big thing
there's
going
a big
on about
thing
it, but
going on.
I
That's
like
okay.
that song. I don't take it for anything. I just listen to it because I enjoy it. That's what I love about music. You know, that's why I love listening to B105. The country music is just good music. You just sit and listen to it. You don't have to put a bunch of thought into it. Just listen.
Well, country music's always about losing your girlfriend and you're
not
at the
anymore.
Bar with a glass of whiskey and yeah.
Man, I tell you what, I can't get enough of it. I just sit there and turn to B105
well,
is on my truck all the time. And it just sits there and it just plays.
Man, management, they're listening. They're going to really like you.
And they're not up yet, are they? It's not even 7.
Anyway, hey, we're talking about some gardening trends for 2019. And, Bob, I ran across some things the other day, and I thought this was so interesting. And
the number one trend?
What?
It's got to be low maintenance, keeping everything low maintenance.
I think low maintenance is what everybody's been going for about 10, 20 years.
And it hasn't changed.
And can't find it.
It has to be.
Only if you buy plastic or silk. Then you don't have to water it. You don't have to worry about how much sun or shade you get.
I had one customer do that.
Yeah, there you go. I think that is so tacky when I see silk
flowers
and plastic
gorgeous
flowers.
In the snow.
Yeah, they're always blooming. But anyway, you know, we have such a very diversified group of people who garden. And that's a whole nother topic too, because I have some great information to share at some other point in time in another show about gardening personas. But you know, we have this group of people who we also term or call the indoor generation. And when I was reading this, I was like, wow, who is the indoor generation? And the indoor generation is that group of people who spend roughly, this is interesting, 90% of them spend 22 hours a day inside the house.
22
hours a day inside.
I can understand teenage boys playing
it's
Xbox
incredible.
Or PlayStation 4 for hours upon hours. You know, we joke about that at my house a little bit with my son. But 20... This is a beautiful place out here. Cincinnati is...
There's a lot to do. When I was
gorgeous.
A kid, I was outside for hours and hours and hours. You know, especially until the sun went down, then I came in.
You know, your parents and my parents were beating us up for being outside too much. Get inside. It's getting late.
It's time
we were
to
outside
eat.
All the time.
Right.
Now we're telling the kids... We're beating the kids, get outside, do stuff, because they all want to play this Xbox and play on their phones, and it's like, get out and enjoy.
It's the social clock society, as they call it, and, you know, I found this astonishing, you know, and reports show that Americans spend approximately, listen to this, 93% of their time either enclosed indoors or in their vehicles, and I could see that, you know, bringing the vehicle element into play because you're traveling to and from work if you're in traffic a lot.
Think about all that air you're breathing that's not as healthy.
That's a lot of time to be closed up, and I couldn't imagine that. Now, I will say this. When I used to work in the office environment, I know exactly what that feels like. I know exactly what that's like, and it was even more important for me to get outdoors, especially in the evening or on the weekends.
Well, let's think about that for a second. You were working in indoors.
Mm-hmm.
9 to 5?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah, it was,
okay.
Yeah.
Saturday Walk out to your off. Car. There's a minute or two.
Yep.
Get in your car, sit in traffic for a half hour.
Nope.
Okay, you didn't from where you were. You were like a 2-minute
drive.
It
was a short ride for me.
Let's say the average commute is, let's just say 30 minutes just for, you know, kind of doing some easy math there, you know. Out of your car, you go in your house, you eat dinner, you know, and if it's this time of year, you're done. There's your outside time.
This time of year, yeah, I can understand that. But during the summer months, I would be cutting the grass. I would be doing something in the yard, outside grilling, something.
Right.
But, you know, it's changed. And also, children spend on an average less than 1 hour per day outside, which they say is 50% less than their parents did as children. So, obviously, it went from 2 hours to 1 hour now.
Right.
That's incredible. And, but anyway.
I understand it, though, because I understand how people are busy. There's always stuff going on. But, you know, need to find time. It's just healthy, too.
You need to find time. And they say turn off the blue lights.
Yeah, turn off the phone, huh?
That's the phone. That's the computer. Get outside. You know, we used to play baseball and do all that stuff until dark.
Yep, we did, too.
Strikeout. Did you ever play strikeout?
I don't know.
You had a rubber ball fast pitch.
Oh, yeah, we always did that.
We called that strikeout.
Mm-hmm. We had whiffle, whatever ball there was. It didn't matter. Whiffle ball, tennis ball, hard ball.
Anyway, my point is we need to get kids involved in gardening, okay? We need to stop for a moment and get away from all the electronic stuff and get outside and enjoy it. You know, hey, I was talking to Alex this morning. You're going to like this one. He's not going to like this. Tony, I've never mowed the yard.
What?
That's what I said.
You know what? We'll break him in. He can come over and mow your mind.
I'm sorry, buddy. I'm on you now.
You know what? I'll tell you. And is there much better than the smell of fresh cut grass?
No, I agree with you. That's my point. You know, and so part of this gardening trend is, so the millennials, what they're doing is the indoors is the new outdoors. So they're starting to buy house plants.
Okay.
They're starting to bring things indoors.
So they're wanting to do some gardening, but not outside.
Right.
Okay.
Kind of, and, you know, houseplants are the big trend right now. Those sales are growing and growing and growing. And 30% of all households last year purchased at least one plant for the indoors, and it's growing. And
it's nice to have green. It's nice to have living things around you. You know, I mean, that's why we love the outside. I mean, not to mention just the benefit that the trees do with the air we breathe and how they clean the air.
I mean, plants generate oxygen.
Just the shade. And I mean, there's so many things that they do, but just mentally sitting underneath a shade tree on a hot summer day.
So we talk about millennials, right?
Yeah.
So in this particular trend, bringing the indoors is the new outdoors. Millennials have fallen in love with indoor plants. They take care of them. They're like their pets. They take pictures of them. They post it on Pinterest. So that is a huge trend. The number one search for various types of plants on Pinterest, I found this to be interesting, were terrariums.
Okay.
So, you know,
Oh, my grandma had one of those.
Yeah, terrarium. So, you know, what was old is now new.
Sure.
Cactus plants and succulents. Tropical plants. Those were the most sought after searched plants.
You know, that doesn't surprise me, because when you even go think of indoor stuff, besides, you know, I remember you having a conversation with Bromwells when they were in here, and they were talking about how some of the old colors were coming back. So when you think of a terrarium, I remember my grandma having that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking going back for me, it would have been the late 70s. But, you know, I know that's kind of the trends.
It's where it is.
In and outdoors.
Yeah. But we had a discussion about how do you attract or how do you get to the millennials? And, you know, so according to the research, they say millennials have become the plant parents, and so to speak, with a sense of purpose and a new connection with nature. And that's how they're doing it, with indoor houseplants.
So let me tell you exactly how, because I deal with all ages, you know, and I'm landscaping houses and dealing with, you know, what's so-called millennials. You know, and when it comes to their landscaping outside, a lot of them are just still wanting the low maintenance because they're very busy. They want to keep it easy. They still want to have color, though. What I'm finding, the ones that I'm dealing with specifically, is they still love to garden. Maybe they haven't been taught as much. You know, maybe my generation didn't teach the next generation as much as, like, my grandfather taught me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's somewhat, we were always so busy, we were all into everything else. We didn't maybe teach as much as we should.
Garden differently, and they want a finished product.
I mean, Alex comes and mows my grass, he's going to love it so much, he's going to want to come back and keep doing it.
But I think he has a good reason for that. We can come back to that. But another trend
is
the return to volunteerism.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what that's all about. And I found it very interesting, and I'm seeing it happening a lot.
Yeah.
And we got to take another quick break, and we'll talk about the return to volunteerism when we come back. 749-B105, one of the trends for 2019.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And co-hosting the show alongside me this morning is my good friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. You know, always a pleasure to have you in, Bob. And it's always fun talking plants and
it is
getting our different viewpoints and takes on stuff. So
we can agree to disagree at times.
Always.
You know, that's the number one Christmas song.
Is that Mariah Carey?
Mariah Carey, that's the number one Christmas song, number one played Christmas song of all time.
Did I understand and hear at one point in time she wasn't too pleased with that in the beginning?
That's what they
said. Very interesting.
And the melody was too simple.
And it's a number one song. And sometimes simple is always better.
$60 million just off that song.
That's not bad. I'll take that.
Yeah.
And we have with us, Bob, Teresa calling about, I think it's a Bradford pear. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
We're doing okay. So tell us a little bit about your Bradford pear, and is it still intact? That's my question.
Yeah, it's in great shape. I mean, we've had to replace it a couple of times. We've been there for like almost 28 years, and the wind took it out, the first couple that we planted. So we planted, I think it was like had Virginia in it or something, a variety they told us was a little stronger.
The new and improved Bradford pear?
So the next big storm we had several years later, it took out a big portion of it. But kind of down, my husband, we just left it alone. And, you know, it's not the pretty perfect shape like most Bradford pears are, but it's still a very pretty, beautiful tree. But we have noticed this is the third time just in like the last, say, maybe 6 months, that when we get heavy rains, the trunk of the tree about 3 feet up from the ground will start oozing out and actually running down the tree what appears to be like soap suds.
Do you notice any injury to the tree or any cracks or splits at that point where you're seeing the oozing?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, no more than the rest of the,
right.
It doesn't look like an unhealthy tree.
I have never seen that before, but I have heard people talk about it, and it's like a oozing substance, and I believe it's some sort of a bacterial infection or something going on underneath the bark.
Mm-hmm.
Does it smell? Did you just put a little bit on your fingertip and see if it has like a nasty odor?
We're just like so amazed by what it did. I got up and took pictures of it, but I've never actually touched it or smelled it. Just that never occurred to me. It just didn't.
Yeah, I've heard people calling it like a white flux or a foamy canker kind of secretion. But other than that, I really can't say exactly what's causing it. And I understand it. You know, the thought of it or what's behind it is a bacterial infection underneath that bark somehow in that tree. Mm-hmm. And it might be when it does rain, as that tree takes in some, they're still taking in water to a degree. That it's saturated and it's expelling it. That would be a really good question for us to ask our good friend Ron Rothaus, the arbor doctor. So we'll see if we can get in touch with him in regards to that. Bob, have you heard of this or seen it? Because I've not.
I have not seen
that. I've heard
that.
People talk about it before.
This is a first for me. I mean, I've seen some different things on locust trees and some different things, but I have not seen anything like this on a pear. She's got me.
Yeah, I think there's like pressure or some gases like underneath that build up, and then it's got to escape. And then you get that frothy or that oozing look. But I've never seen it. I've heard people talk about it before. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, are you going to be hanging in there listening to us for the most part of the morning? Or is there a way that we can get back in touch with you?
Yeah, you can call back this number that I called on.
Okay.
I live down the street from Bard's Nursery. Do you guys live on Baldwin?
That's where my parents live.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I live on that road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, but it was just a weird thing, and you know, every time it does it, we're like, oh my gosh, and none of our other trees do it. Do you think when you're saying you think that he has a bacterial infection under the bark, is it something that's going to kill the tree, something I need to maybe take care of, or?
I'm not really sure. You know, it's a buildup of, you know, something's going on underneath the bark there that it builds up pressure and it excretes through openings in the tree or cracks. And that's why I was asking you, were there any wounds there, too? And I've heard sometimes it has a very foul odor, almost like a yeast kind of odor. Mm-hmm. But again, I've never seen it personally. I've just heard people talk about it before. Mm-hmm. And I'm just merely suspecting that might be part of it. But what we're going to do, Teresa, is when you get off the line with us, hang on there for a moment, and I'll have Alex get your contact information. And I'll see if we can kind of reach out to Ron Rothaus somehow during the course of the show this morning. He's the arbor doctor, very knowledgeable guy when it comes to trees and so forth. And if he can shed some light on it, but we'll call you back and let you know more about it. And if there's any thing that can be done, or if it's just something, in fact, that you let run its course.
Okay, great. I appreciate it, because if it's something that's going to kill the tree and then it's something that can spread, you know, because we have a lot of trees in our yard, but I'd appreciate it very much. Thank
yeah,
you.
Will yep. do. And you have a Merry Christmas. And Bob, did you know anything about it? We'll hang in there with
Let's
us.
Let's call Ron, see if we can get a hold
yeah,
of
we'll
him.
Yeah, I'll get a hold of Ron at some point in time during the show. And again, feel free to give Alex your number and we'll be in touch.
Okay, thanks again and have a Merry Christmas.
You
Merry
too.
Christmas.
Thanks, Teresa.
Bye-bye.
That's very interesting. I've never seen that before, but I have heard of that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm not really sure what the cause is or the culprit behind that. And
I'm not either. I honestly haven't seen that.
I've seen, you know, various things like an oozing black tar-like substance on various trees and things like yep. that. But not that frothing kind of.
No, I mean, you'll see like the sap kind of coming out of like a cherry tree, or, you know, where it almost looks like maple syrup pouring out
exactly.
when it has a bore.
Right.
You know, you can see, you know, I've seen some on some locust trees in the fall where they're kind of shutting down. There's some weird stuff going on occasionally with them. But on a pear tree, kind of soap suds, that one's yeah. kind of got me.
Yeah, so. It's interesting. And other than that, we'll get back to that subject or that topic in a moment. But we also have, I believe it's Scott with us on the line. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Actually, it's Walt.
It's Walt. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about
hey,
that,
I got
Walt.
A two-part thing, a mm-hmm. question. Crepe myrtles, like a tree that's in Tennessee. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Will they do well up here?
They can. We're about as far north as you want to bring a crepe myrtle. Some crepe myrtles are more temperamental than others. So those that you typically find at your local garden centers here in the tri-state area are the hardiest of the varieties that we can bring up into our neck of the woods. Plant them early in the season.
Correct.
Therefore, they're able to get well enough rooted in to where versus where we like to plant a lot of trees in the fall.
Right.
Yeah, it may not make that winter if it's severe enough. Tree form, I will tell you this. If, in fact, we have a severe winter, this has happened to me a couple of times, my crepe myrtle would die back to the ground and come back the following season as a shrub form.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So wait it out. If you experience anything of the sort, wait it out. Be patient, because a lot of times it takes them a little while to break dormancy, especially up here in our zone. But certainly also plant those in a protected area. You know, around our homes, we have these little microclimates.
Plant it
in a protected area. And from that point, you know, just see how she goes. A plant well worth having in the landscape and
it
one worth
good.
Taking
yes.
the risk. Yes. Bob, yes. what do you want? What do you, any ideas?
My next question, though, would be, I got a landscaper. He does my plants is like the boxwoods and that. They're about 2 foot, and he comes in and takes about 4 inches off, and then he does some of the, I don't know the names of plants, but the ones that are that'll grow like 4 foot in the summer, and they're leafy. I mean, he'll take them back. I mean, what's the average cost? Because I don't know if I'm being overcharged or not.
For maintenance?
Yeah, and I don't want you to, I mean, I'm not expecting you to give me an exact.
That's a good question for Bob. Bob, do you have, for
well,
maintenance,
it always varies. And here's what always varies in it. One, if it's pretty simple, straightforward, and you're just going to come in and you're going to trim some bushes up and clean up, you know, it's always an hourly kind of thing, typically, is how most people figure is how much time is it going to take, so they're going to have to charge you an X amount. I've heard guys charging anywhere from, you know, $50 an hour per man. I've heard people charging $75 an hour per man.
Right.
It just depends on what they're doing, how much, and it also depends on their skill level. I mean, if you got a guy who's just going to come in there and do a hatchet job, yeah, you're going to get a discount, but you're also going to get probably have some problems in the end. So,
right. Well, they always charge the haul off, which I agree with that. I mean, you got to get rid of it. But, I mean,
there's disposal fees. Every time, unfortunately, there's disposal fees because they're charging us more.
Right.
Gas has gone up, insurance gone up. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of costs that maybe people don't figure in that go into some of these charges that they don't see, but they have to be in there. And one is even good quality tools and having them sharpened. So there's always little things like that. So,
well, they always use steel products, which I don't know if that's good or not.
That's
but
good.
That seems that's what they're using. And, I mean, I don't complain about that. I just wasn't sure. I mean, like a two-foot round boxwood, they'll round them up and shape them up, and they'll take probably 4 inches off. Mm-hmm. And I think, if my memory's right, it's like $5 to $6 a shrub. And I don't know if that's fair. Right. I mean, they do it by shrub.
No, that's bad. And cleanup.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of cleanup, it's still going to take them more, you know, a few minutes to do that, a few minutes to clean
sure.
it up. So, you know, I mean, that's, I mean, first question is, are you happy with what they're doing?
Yeah, I can't say nothing too bad about them, but I mean, it's like, I just, you always wonder if you're being charged right.
Well,
and it's like that.
I will tell you for a fact, I have no problem when people want to get other estimates against mine. I really don't. And I think anybody who is a quality landscaper is going to say it's okay, you know, and if you find somebody you like better, fine. I know I'm not always the cheapest. I can tell you I'm not always the most expensive, but, you know, I put in the time.
Sometimes you don't want the cheapest, and I understand that. So,
yeah.
And then, I mean, they'll do them little red thorny ones, but they're only like a foot tall. They only take I don't know what they are. They're red, and they're like
barberries.
Prickly.
Yeah.
And I mean, they only charge $3 a piece, so I mean,
that's
I'm not
cheap.
Griping there.
I think that's not. I don't think that's. I think
that's
they're
pretty,
treating
that's
fair. A fair shake, you know. And what Bob said, you know, the real question is, are you satisfied? And here's the other element too. There are a lot of fly by night guys out there who say they're going to be there and they don't show up. You
right.
Know, so
and
if
that
you,
means a lot.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're pretty satisfied, and I'd stay.
Well,
where
this
you are.
Year. This year, right now, they haven't got there, and it's due to the season, and I kind of understand it's been crazy.
Yeah.
Meaning wet and different things. They've done mulch and that, but not the final pruning and
sure.
that. So,
well,
I mean,
there'll be time for that. They'll be
okay.
They're all right. If they don't have that done yet, they're busy, that's okay. There's still time to clean up most of what you're talking about there. But sounds to me like you're getting treated pretty well. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
What I wanted to ask you.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
All right,
and
Walt,
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Hey, how about one guy come mow mine, too?
What's that?
That one guy you wanted to have mow yours?
Oh, yeah. He wants. We'll send Alex your way.
That's right. We'll make him real happy.
There you go.
There you
right,
go, Alex.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
I like
see
that. That was good. That
you
was
know,
good.
He brings up a good point. You always wonder, you know, but you got to look at it, you know, with. You got to look at it. Are you happy? Are you satisfied? You know, did they do a good job? You know, because landscaping is not cheap.
You know, it's like
nothing about
it's cheap. It's like having a good physician. I mean, all physicians have different charges.
Yeah.
You know, you know, are you satisfied? That's where it is.
You know, but like some of these guys, if they just do a hatchet job on their plants and they just trim and they trim and they trim and they butcher, you're going to have more problems.
Oh, you'll have more problems.
And somebody that really knows what they're doing. And,
yeah.
You know, and mulching's another thing. There's a lot of guys who just mulch and they just throw it down.
There's an art to it, and like you said, sharp tools and so forth. I mean, you get what you pay for.
Right.
That's it.
And prices, they're all over. I mean, like I said, I've heard all kinds of things. I'm not saying what's good or what's bad because it's not my position, I think, at this point to say that. But if you're happy with somebody and they're treating you fair and you feel it's a fair price, then
if I'm doing something for you, I'm going to charge you $40 an hour. That's where I am. That's my rate. It should be higher, maybe. Maybe it should be lower. I don't know. But
it depends on the job.
It depends on the job.
You know, if somebody brings something to you and you're making a planter or you're doing something where you don't have to do a whole lot, no big deal. But if you got to drive 45 minutes,
right,
it might be a big
deal.
Or you got heavy pruning and a lot to throw away.
I got it. All right, 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. We have to take another quick break. And sounds like we're getting some calls, some people interested in what's going on in their landscape. And if you have anything you want to add to it or ask us.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And if you're just joining us, I don't think today is going to be too bad after all. We'll be hitting a high around 40, and if the weather guys are correct, we might see a little bit of sunshine popping out here and there, a little partly sunny, or you can call it partly cloudy, your choice. But Bob Bard's co-hosting the show with me this morning, and we've been covering a lot of ground. We started talking about some trends for 2019. We've had some great calls, some great questions, and I just want to let Teresa know we did reach out to Ron Rothaus, the arbor doctor, and just seeing if he can give us a phone in, and we can kind of check on that that oozing that she's experiencing with her Bradford pear.
We've kind of narrowed it down that it's...
You know, I've heard of it. It's called a flux, like a white flux disease, but
F-L-U-X.
I'm not familiar with it, but I think that Ron can
frothy
shed some...
And slime.
Hey, frothy and slime.
Yep, there's two types. So I don't know... the treatment on it, but we're
trying
that's
to find
what
I don't. I think the treatment would be even more interesting, and if it's pretty common or not, I would be interested to know. And that's why I think our industry is so interesting.
It is,
and that the best part of it, when I came from the corporate world years ago, which I enjoyed what I used to do, I've met a lot of wonderful people, and the camaraderie amongst everybody in a tri-state area that have garden centers and nurseries and so forth is incredible. And we all know one another. A lot of us belong to the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a wonderful network of people. And I can assure you of this, that we're looking out for your best interest as customers. And, you know, even the avid gardeners or the novice gardener, we want to help you do your best and be the best in the landscape. So that's why it's important to support local businesses here in the tri-state area. All local businesses, not just the garden centers and nurseries that we primarily talk about, but all businesses is so important that for every dollar that you spend locally, on average, 67 cents of that dollar stays in the local economy, and that's huge versus a box store. And I'm not against box stores, but only 40-something cents stays here locally. So keeping the funds at home is important. And think of this, too. Whenever you have something going on or a special event, a lot of you ask us for donations and things like that. And, you know, we always take that into consideration. So we want to support our communities, and we also ask that you help support us. That's so important. So that's what it's about.
Yeah, it is. Well said. Well said.
Well, thanks. Thank you, Bob. And before we went into one of the breaks, we finished talking about one of the trends. Indoors is the new outdoors. And the return of volunteerism. And when I say that, that really has a lot to do with, like, community gardening, people volunteering their time, people volunteering cleaning up areas in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. people volunteering their time to plant trees that were donated or purchased at a good price. All of these things, you know, the community effort and the volunteering is so important. And that is on the rise. And I think that's important. And that's what strengthens our communities.
That's a great thing. I know one of the local high schools over by us, the varsity football coach, has his kids go and work at the church across the street for landscaping. You know, he encourages that. And I think it makes a good young man. And it's really great to see that guy and that coach do that, because he's really teaching those kids. It's not just football. You know, he's teaching about life. And I think that's pretty cool.
It's a great lesson learned, that's for sure. And giving, it's all about giving. Don't always be the recipient of being the taker.
Well, and I think this station, B105, does a good job of representing that themselves. I mean, look at the Toys for Tots. I mean, look what big day. Look at Statman. Statman was wrecking everything. Remember, he'd tell everybody to go on Amazon and order 1,000 rattles if they could for little babies, you know. I mean, they were really just encouraging people to get out and do something nice for people.
And that's important, especially mm-hmm. for those who are less fortunate than some of us. And
hope that's a trend that keeps growing.
Yeah, it needs to keep growing. So volunteering, do something rewarding. And
absolutely.
You always feel good internally when you can give.
Mm-hmm.
Another trend is one called Make Soil and Not Waste. And I thought this was kind of interesting. You know, and this is an interesting stat from the standpoint of a large source of greenhouse gas methane that's, you know, that's produced.
Mm-hmm.
Landfills are the number three culprit.
Okay.
You know, if we can keep things out of the landfills, and I didn't know this. I know we've all heard about the issue with plastic straws this past year. Daily, per day, there's 500 million straws that are discarded.
Wow, that's a lot of plastic.
That's a lot of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, and our good friends at Cohen,
yes,
were in a few weeks ago talking about all the recycling. And, you know, this is a good, maybe another good time to bring it up, not just for the straws, but think about all the electronics and old stuff you're going to have when you get your new stuff for Christmas or your kids. Don't just throw it in the dumpster to get it into the landfill.
Yeah. And, you know, composting is growing too. And if you have the area and the wherewithal and you can build a compost bin, do a multi-bin type of compost setup.
Grass clippings.
Absolutely.
You know, you could throw all that stuff in there and have it. And eventually that stuff turns into great soil. And then you can put that around your plants. You can mix it in with your plants. Just make sure it's aged. But if it's aged, if you've ever had an old compost pile and you've ever dug in it,
Ooh, it's nice.
It is rich.
It's nice stuff.
Rich, good soil, great for plants.
And earthworms love it. And it's a great side dressing for your vegetable plants.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's another term, you know, for those of us who are older, we always call it repurposing. But now they're referring to it as upcycling, which is a creative way to reuse older products versus taking those items to the landfill. So upcycling is big, and also it's big with a company that you and I are familiar with in the garden industry. That is Espoma. So mm-hmm. some of their fertilizer bags are based upon plant-based resins, and that all biodegrades.
Absolutely.
And that's
I think you're
seeing
a lot more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So make soil and not waste. And also, you know, this was interesting too. Gardening by the moon. We all like the moon.
Gardening by the moon. Huh?
Yeah, phases of the moon.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people set their gardens and everything.
We know the phases of the moon affect how the plant grows. So, you know, the moon phase gardening has been around for a long time, and I know you have an annual subscription to the Farmer's Almanac.
They talk not, but I have a Farmer's Almanac. And so far, it's been right.
So, apparently, more people are turning to the moon for advice on when's the best time to plant,
mm-hmm.
when's the best time to prune. Weed. I've heard people talk about the best time to weed or spray for weeds.
Yeah.
And I don't know which that it is, if it's in the waning part of the moon or the waxing part of the moon.
You know what my favorite time to spray weeds are?
When they're bothering you.
Anytime there's weeds.
And also we go when we use the moon for harvesting things too.
Yes, absolutely.
So I just find that really interesting. And when we talk about planting plants, and, you know, we're talking about the phases of the moon. You know, they say you want to plant your annuals and vegetables that bear crops above ground. Okay, like it'd be like your tomato plants and pepper plants.
Mm-hmm.
During the waxing of the moon, and that is from the day the moon is in its new stage to the day that the moon is full.
There you go.
That's the waxing moon. Now, the opposite of that, you want to plant your flowering bulbs, perennials, biennials, and vegetables that bear crops below the ground, so your root crops, okay, during the waning of the moon. That's from the day after it is full to the day before it's becoming a new moon.
I guarantee you there's somebody listening right now that has been doing that on their farm forever. They were taught by their grandfather, or they were taught, and that is the way they set the crops as long as the weather allows them to.
And I can't remember, there's a way that their farmers would set fence posts based upon the waning and the waxing of the moon. They say if you dig a hole, and I don't know which phase that it is, and you filled it back up with the soil that you took out during the stage of the moon, either the soil will go all into that hole that it was dug out of, or you would have excess soil. You ever heard that?
Nope. We're going to have to do a little more research on some of this.
That's interesting.
We're going to have to dig some holes on your property and see if it works.
And we're going to take another quick break. 749-B105 In and Around the House with Tony Works. And when we come back, our friend Ron Rothaus is with us.
Sweet.
And we're going to talk about the oozing substance that Teresa had brought to our attention that was coming out of her Bradford pear.
We're all going to learn today.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And co-hosting alongside me this morning again is Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And we're talking gardening. We've covered a lot of ground thus far, and we've talked a little bit about Christmas, which we'll talk about some of that too before the end of today's program, and some last minute gift giving ideas as far as that goes as well. And before we went into the break, we reached out to Ron Rothaus, the arbor doctor, and he's on the line with us. Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Good morning. Just fine. How are you?
We're doing okay. We had a really interesting question, and it was in regards to a Bradford pear. A caller had mentioned, it seems like the last couple times we've had some rains, she's noticing a white oozing substance, like a froth substance, coming out of the bark.
It was soapy, she said.
Soapy. Does that sound like white flux, or give us your spin on it, Ron?
Well, it could be a couple things. Mm-hmm. There is a bacterial infection that trees can get that can cause an oozing from the trunk. But the other thing that can happen, I haven't seen too much of the bacterial infection in pears.
That's good. All right.
Doesn't mean they can't get it. And even if they do, bacterial wet wood, which is what it's called, isn't treatable, and it's generally not real serious. But the other thing that can happen is simply mineral buildup that you have on the bark when it rains. That can be kind of washed off or rinsed off, and it can cause that frothy.
Okay.
Substance, just water dripping down, like from a higher part of the tree down under the root flare of the tree. So it could be a little bit of either one. Pears are notorious for having extremely tight branching angles,
mm-hmm.
and you can get water buildup, or water can actually be held in between those in that really tight bifurcation, and then when it drips down onto the root flare. You could get some of the minerals that have been held in that bifurcated area. So it could be any one of those things. But I think the take-home message is that condition is not something to be worried about. I'd be more worried about the tight branching angles.
Right, the crotch angles. Yeah. She said it was one of the newer, improved Bradford pears, and I've heard that term, and I forgot what she said that the name was. Are they really that? Are they stronger than the original Bradford when it was introduced, or are they pretty similar?
If it's a true Bradford, the difference between the older Bradfords and the quote-unquote improved Bradford is how they're produced in the nursery.
Mm-hmm.
They just have been much more vigilant about pruning so that when the tree develops those tight bifurcations as it grows, they prune those out, and they try to leave the more horizontal branching so that your branching angles aren't as tight, and that way structurally the tree is stronger, because
mm-hmm.
the wider the branching angle, the stronger the branching angle, the more narrow it is,
the weaker
the branching angle. So that's just a matter of pruning in the nursery. And a big thing, going forward, as you've probably heard, is that in a couple of years it's actually going to be illegal to either grow or mm-hmm. transport any of the calorie pears in the state of Ohio.
Yep. By 2023, I think it's January 1st of 2023 is when that takes effect.
Yeah, and the only reason it's that long is because they didn't want nurseries to get stuck with a lot of stock that they couldn't sell.
Yes, absolutely.
But the calorie pears have become very, very invasive. It's really an ecological problem, so really not trying to encourage people to plant them anymore. I have some colleagues who would say cut them all down, but I'm not in that camp. If you have one... cutting one tree down isn't going to make up for the 10 million that are growing up out in the countryside.
I agree with you there. I agree with you 100%.
Right.
I think there's some other advantageous elements to that. When you're cruising along 275 or any of the interstates and you see a lot of those calorie pears the wild pears, mm-hmm. I should say, growing on the sides, there's an element to holding back erosion situations, or potential erosion problems. But, yeah, they are taking over land space from some of the natives,
Yeah, the problem is that they're from China, and when they seed in as densely as they do, they displace native plants,
right?
Native trees, and even, you know, wildflowers and things like that. I mean, you could even make a case that, you know, a lot of the pollinators that might be attracted to goldenrod or the milkweeds and things like that, that those wildflowers are not going to be able to seed into those field areas as readily if they're, you know, choked out with pear trees.
Mm-hmm.
So it just becomes a kind of an ecological problem when a non-native invasive plant like that kind of takes over.
Yeah, you know, talking about invasives, you know, I was kind of surprised in some states, you know, euonymus, the burning bush, is becoming an invasive species in some situations.
There are a lot of plants that are on the various invasive lists. I think, you know, I kind of categorize things at different levels. I mean, things like amur honeysuckle and the calorie pear and South Kudzu, mm-hmm, are really, really aggressive, obnoxious invasives, whereas the burning bush is seeding into native landscapes or native areas. You know, I've seen it in some parks in Indiana and even in Ohio. So you're starting to see it, and in one or two cases I saw a decent amount of it, but it's nowhere near,
right,
you know, the aggressiveness that you have with the honeysuckle or the pears.
Right. It's not causing as much damage to the other stuff around it as some of these pear trees are.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, the other day, talking about invasive still on that same note, I like the Japanese bloodgrass and parata.
Mm-hmm.
And in Kentucky, I can't get any more from nurseries up north because they won't ship it into the state. Yeah. It's interesting how all that relates and works out. And you know, it just, we got to control the native environment, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the bloodgrass, I like that plant too, but again, it's a non-native, so I guess if they've identified it as seeding into natural areas, which I personally have never seen, but you know, it may have made it onto some invasive lists.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of things, like for example, the miscanthus, the maiden grass, that plant is from Asia, and there are a lot of different cultivars, and there are a couple that are exceptionally invasive that,
yes,
have taken over in the southeast.
That'll see,
but many of
that.
The cultivars that are sold in nurseries around here are not at all. I've never seen them invade into ecosystems.
Right.
So it's kind of guilt by association. I mean, yes, there are a couple miscanthus that are invasive, but not all the miscanthus are invasive.
I agree.
So, you know, you kind of have to separate those out. I mean, it's like some of the native plants people say, well, all miscanthus is bad. It's like, no. There's just a couple,
sure,
of them that are bad, and a lot of the ones that are sold in nurseries are actually fine plants that really don't cause a problem.
Yeah, certain varieties. Well, Ron, thanks for following up with us. Always a pleasure to talk with you, and Merry Christmas to you and your family, and stay in touch, and we'll talk to you in 2019.
Sounds great. Merry Christmas, right, to you. And I have a birthday 2 days after Christmas, so I'll send you my address. You can send me my presents.
Okay,
well,
do that.
Happy birthday. Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Take care.
All
see
right.
you. Bye.
I'm glad he called in, because now we can give,
you know,
was it
he's,
you know,
a wealth of knowledge when it comes to trees. He really is, and he studies it hard,
yep,
and he gives you the facts, and he doesn't try and sell you a bill of goods you don't need.
Yeah,
the arbor doctor.
Like, there's nothing to worry about.
No,
was
nothing
it
to worry about.
Who was it? Was the lady that called?
Teresa.
Him? Teresa, thank you.
So
Teresa.
I have,
so hopefully Teresa is still listening.
And if not,
nothing
we have,
to worry about.
We have Teresa's phone number, and we'll certainly touch base and get back,
yeah,
with
nothing
her.
Nothing to worry about.
That's why I like this show. And as I was saying before, I learn something every day about the horticultural world.
Mm-hmm.
And at our fingertips here throughout the tri-state area, you know, we said this a moment ago, the camaraderie amongst everybody. We're all friends. We all talk. We all cut up. And we're all competitors, but we're friends. And
right. Well, that's this show's about the information. It has nothing to do with Jackson's or Bard's. It's about the show. It's about everybody.
It's about
everybody
in
the gardens.
It includes everyone.
Everybody listening is a part of this show. Without them, there's no show. But it's not.
Well, without Alex, it's not a show.
Well, that's
Alex,
true. Alex is the main guy.
Don't let him step on you like that, buddy. You know, he's treating you like chopped liver.
If we didn't have Alex at all, the show wouldn't run. I mean, literally, you and I would walk in here and have nothing to do.
We would do our best. You know, you might hear bits and pieces of silence. But anyway, 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. When we come back, let's turn it up a notch. And Bob and I want to give you 10 of our favorite trees, not necessarily ornamental blooming or shade or any type of tree, just 10 well worth considering and looking at. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And we're just a couple of days from the big day before old St. Nick comes down the chimney and brings you some wonderful gifts. And maybe you'll get some nice gardening gifts,
too.
We'll
be the happiest people on this side of... Sorry, it just brought me back to Christmas vacation.
Leave some cookies out for the jolly old fella.
What kind do you leave out?
You know what? I'd leave him out some bourbon balls and a little glass of bourbon. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
What's your favorite cookie for this time? What's your favorite cookie?
You know what? I'm not a sweets person. I'm really not.
Yeah.
But there's, and I've not had any candy, any sweets, any cookies yet for the holiday season.
Wow.
I'm trying to keep this slim, fit look.
Hey, round is a shape.
Round is in.
People say, are you in shape? Out. And you say, round is a shape.
Round is a shape. But I love Buckeyes. Is that, that's really, that's okay. Candy. I don't think, is that a, that's not considered a cookie.
I don't know. Snickerdoodle does it for me. The snickerdoodle.
Snickerdoodle?
Mm-hmm. Cinnamon and sugar. Oh, when they're fresh, there's not much better.
Really?
You've never
heard? No. I am the guy, pickles, hot things. I'm sour.
No,
I'm the sour kind of craving guy.
I don't eat as much as I used to.
Not sugars.
You know, but I do still, you know, chocolate chips always good. You can't go wrong with that. You know, any sugar cookies good.
You know, I like macadamia nuts that are in cookies. That would be something if I favored something of the sort. And it has to be soft, you know. Even if I didn't have teeth, I could still eat it and chew it with my gums. I don't like hard stuff, you know, or burnt crisp things.
Yeah, I don't like my cookies burnt. They have a little bit underdone is better for me.
And that's why I jokingly say all the time, if there's a potato chip of all potato chips, it's Grippos.
Oh, you like Grippos?
I love Grippos. Easy to, yeah.
I like the Lay's stacks.
Lay's stacks.
Yeah.
And Alex, you a Pringle guy? No, he doesn't know. So. He's not sure.
Yeah, he is. He just doesn't want to see.
He likes Grippos. He knows.
So
the
before
good
we went to break, we you and I got me excited because I know you're nerding out on this too. You're all you get old. You get all geeked out when it
I'm
comes to this stuff.
I'm interested to hear what you have to say because it's always interesting.
You
and
go
as
first.
Long as you,
I'll be nice. I'll let my elders go first.
You know, I'm going to talk about a tree we don't talk about often. I think it deserves a lot of notoriety, and that's the Taxodium, the bald cypress.
Oh,
I like it.
Man, you're starting there, huh?
Yeah, I am, because it appears, you know, it's a conifer, but what's unique about it, it's deciduous. When we say deciduous, it means it drops its needles.
Correct.
It drops its foliage. And this is interesting, too, because it's native to some wetlands.
Correct.
Can also tolerate, once established, you know, some dryness. So I think it has a purpose there. They're even using it as street plantings off, not right on the street, but just adjacent to thoroughfares, I should say. Mm-hmm. And then a relative to it that I really like a lot, I think adds a lot of interesting look to a landscape, and it doesn't get quite as tall as the bald cypress, which can reach anywhere in a 50-foot range, give or take. But I also like Cascade Falls, the weeping variety.
Sure.
You might see that get around 10 foot, give or take, and you might have to keep it staked a little bit somehow, but it gives you that nice weeping form and texture.
I like the fall color, even though it's kind of rusty. And
it is. It's got
it's
that, kinda, yeah.
got that rusty color to it, so it's, you know, it's a nice tree.
Little bronze.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's durable, too. There's really not a lot of issues with that tree.
So do I get a check mark for that one?
You get a check mark for
that
one. Well, I'm going to bring another one very similar to that.
I think I might know what it is.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Dawn Redwood.
Okay.
I love the Dawn Redwood tree. Again, the Dawn Redwood tree in the spring, summer, and fall looks like an evergreen. Well, before it changes colors. But when it's green, it looks like an evergreen. Very soft, very fast growing when you get it in the right spot. It has to have room to get big because it can get really big. But it's
how big, Bob?
It can get 60 to 90 feet tall. And it could get 30 foot across. I mean, I've seen some huge ones. I love the bark, how it's got a little texture to it, a little different color. I love the fall coloring on it because it's that yellow kind of goldish color as well. When the needles drop, they drop right to the bottom, so the tree's mulched for the winter. There's really not much to do with it. But it's so soft. And even if it, you know, unfortunately, you know, high wind, like a tornado wind or something, anything can break. You know, one of my friends had one, and he had two of them, actually. And when the tornado went through Piner, one of them split in half. It took right back off, though, and started growing. It's a tough, durable tree.
So responded well to the damage?
It is responded incredibly well.
Interesting.
And, you know, it is related to the redwoods from out west, but it's not going to get that big.
It has that seasonal interest to it. And I was over in a cemetery the other day. Sometimes if I go to lunch, I just go over and just
sit. There's a big one over there, isn't there?
There's a couple over at Mother of God Cemetery.
Okay.
And I like how they grow low to the branching can be relatively low.
Very nice shape.
Yeah. All right.
What's your next tree?
Where am I going to go? It's, I have to go with the paper bark maple.
Oh, I knew you were going there. I knew this was on your list.
That's on my list. I still have like two or three I want to do in a grouping down in my backyard somehow, but I don't know how I'm going to do it yet. But it reminds me of a grouping that I will drive by occasionally when I go and visit and just check out what's growing and how things are doing in Spring Grove Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And in a grouping, there's one grouping over there. I'm not exactly sure the plot. And if you like trees or shrubs and different native species and various things and champion trees, you need to just take a drive through Spring Grove Cemetery sometime during the summer.
Yeah.
And winter. You know, trees have winter interest, and they also have spring interest. And the flowering elements to some trees is very interesting and unique and rewarding. But I like the paper bark maple. And, you know, it's the exfoliating bark. There's something about exfoliating bark and that you know, you get those color tones, that cinnamon color to it. Yeah, so that's one of my favorites. It's a must.
That's a good one. That's a really good tree to have. So I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to go with something flowering right now. Kind of a tropical look. You know, the leaves are a little elongated, kind of like a sweet bay. Not really, but, elongated like a sweet bay magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
The flowers are little tiny flowers that hang from the tree branches. So it also gets a purple berry on it as well. And I'm going to go with the white fringe tree.
Oh,
you didn't
that's
know
what
where I was going
to talk about. Yeah.
You know, people don't talk about this tree. I don't sell a lot of them, but I'd like to sell more. And we have one actually at the garden center that's multi-stemmed. It's like almost started as a bush form, and we trimmed it up. And it's really beautiful in the spring with the white flowers that hang down, dark green leaves that have a little bit of veining through them, so you can kind of see the deep veining through it as well. Love it even when the leaves are just coming out and the white flowers are mixed. It's really pretty. And then
say that again.
It's really pretty.
It's really pretty.
It is. And then it does get the berry on it as well. It can get a little size to it. You know, it can grow 20 feet high. But what's really cool is this one's zoned for zone 4 to 9. So it covers a lot of the 48 states of the United States. You know, it really covers a lot of area until it gets to the very tip into the real cold parts of the United States, or the southern part of Florida. It won't grow in there, but it'll cover a lot of different grounds and grow in a lot of different areas. It's a good tree.
I'll give that a check mark, Bob.
I did. I surprised you on that one, didn't I?
Yeah. You know, and again, there's so many different varieties of trees and shrubs and annuals, perennials, you name it, that sometimes it just doesn't come to thought. It just doesn't come to mind, but they get overlooked. You know, we forget about them, but yet they're stalwarts in the landscape.
I agree.
You know, I'm going to throw this one out there.
Uh-oh.
And you don't see it often, but how about the yellow wood?
Oh, yeah.
You know, once it matures and it starts giving you those cascading pea-like clusters of long, fragrant blooms, you know, I think it's very interesting. And I think it's well-behaved, I mean, from a height standpoint, around 30 feet, give or take.
Right.
A little bit more of a horizontal spread. A nice yellow fall color. And it's one you don't see often in a landscape.
You notice you're leaning towards yellow fall colors on a lot of things?
Your I like
first
red.
Three options have been yellow. Kind of orangey, coppery color.
Oh, it's maybe it's caution. No, just kidding.
Is that something that you're like?
No, a little bit, a little bit. But we got to take a quick break again, and we're going to continue this discussion. Some of our favorite top 10 trees, and there are many, many more. These are just ones that come to mind with Bob and myself. And if you have anything you want to add to it that you have in your landscape, certainly share that with us. 749-B105. And also, Barbara, when we come back out of the break, we will talk to you. Looks like you're having some mossy issues in the lawn. So we'll cover that as well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
I like it. He was on last night.
He was, Mr. Works.
He went down in. He slithered down into Whoville.
You know, they had both of them on. They had the cartoon version.
Yes.
And then they had them both on. And yes. I watched Elf last night, too. I got to watch all three. It was great.
Well, what a nice night. What a nice, wonderful evening you had, Bob.
I did.
I went to bed, or after the Grinch, I went to bed.
Did you?
Yes.
I tried to go to bed.
Yeah, it's tough. When you know you have to get up at 3:30, it's tough. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works, and co-hosting alongside me today is my friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. And we thought we had Barbara on the line, but actually Barbara just wanted us to touch base on moss in her lawn, and we will do that in the next segment. We wanted to continue our discussions with our top 10 trees or favorite trees. And no, they are not in any specific order.
They are not.
And
there's more than these. These are just 10 we like.
We're just touching.
Yeah, we're just touching the surface.
We're scratching the surface.
So
it's your turn.
One of my favorite. Now, this is a common tree. You're going to see this in everybody's garden center. But the fall color was outstanding this year. Absolutely outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the red. Red is my favorite color. So I'm going with any of the red maples, but specifically Red Point or Autumn Blaze maples. I absolutely love those trees. They do get a little size to them, you know, 40, 50 feet, 30, 40 feet wide. They grow fast, very durable with our clay soils. They handle and adapt well to that, can handle some moisture. Typically, your maples might even grow a little faster if they're kind of in a, not a standing waterlogged area, but if they're near a wet area, they're going to be all right. They're going to be fine if water's running through there. But I just love the fall color. And I know it's just me being funny about that color, but that color red stands out with all the greens and yellows we have in our woods. Basic?
I'll check that one off. Basic, but functional. You know, I am going to go. It's a tree we don't talk about, and it's a tree that really sustained a lot of it just was wiped out years ago, and it was the elm, the American elm. So
starting to come back.
It's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those, Rick Ebert, who just this past year had passed away, and I had the pleasure of knowing briefly. I would buy stuff from Rick for the holiday season, and I just remembered I met Rick for the first time, and he was planting a group of these particular species of elms. And then there's one called Alley.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is another one that it has that beautiful kind of textured, exfoliating type of bark. And the mosaic look of the orange, tan, gray color to this bark on this tree is wonderful to have. It's those things that, you know, I'm looking for those seasonal interest.
Sure.
In a tree, and especially during the winter months when you drop all the foliage or all the foliage drops. You know, what else is there about that tree that's attractive? And that's what leads me to it. And I think the elm is a great species. The frontier elm, I think people
Princeton are starting, elm.
The Princeton. So I think that, you know, there's some use for this species of tree again.
Well, and you know, they're resistant to the Dutch elm disease.
Right.
But with our losing all our ash trees, it's kind of nice to have that canopy tree. You know, the only disadvantage I see to the elm is occasionally the Japanese beetles can like them. But you know what?
I'm okay.
You can deal with that. We don't have that every year.
It's cosmetic.
A big problem. Yeah, it's cosmetic. It doesn't hurt the
It's like acne. It goes away.
But I like the fact that you brought that up because I think that's a good tree. And I think it's one that needs to be used more.
Thank you.
So
it kind of gets overlooked, you know. It's just one of those trees.
So there's one that I like, and I'll be honest with you. Sometimes they're hard to find. But I like the Zelkova.
Oh, there you go.
You know, it's another canopy tree, kind of a little bit more of a hot air balloon shape to it, how it's a little bit skinny towards the bottom, and as it goes up, it rounds out but gets pretty wide. Nice fall color, little leaves, so it doesn't make a big mess. Green vase is one I specifically like. What I love about it is you're seeing those on a lot of street trees as well, and they're incredibly durable. There are some up at a school in Independence, Kentucky, and it's about the only thing that's survived through the years of droughts because they don't have a lot of people taking care of those trees. They just planted them when the building was built and it's done. But they're right next, they're close to sidewalks and driveways. They're not blocking where buses are hitting them or cars are hitting them. But yet they're starting to get big enough to provide a little bit of shade and cool the blacktop. So I really think the Zelkova is an interesting tree, but just realize you're not going to go by it like you see maples, and there's maples everywhere.
Why do you think that is, that you don't see it as often?
Well, one, I just don't think they're asked for as much, so the growers aren't growing them. You know, let's face it, the growers want to sell something that can sell thousands of trees. You know, so a grower can grow 1,000 maples and sell 1,000 maples or 50 Zelkovas.
I have to think that it's changing a little bit, and I think it's because we've lost a lot of ash trees. We also, you know, had some issues, and still, I'm not quite if we still do, but I know that we're closely monitoring things over in your neck of the woods in the Batavia area with the Asian longhorn beetle.
Out in Bethel.
Out in Bethel. Yeah. Or not Batavia, Bethel. Thank
I know
you.
What you're saying. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think diversity is the key issue here. And like the Zelkova, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And there's another Zelkova that I find interesting and I have ordered, and it's called Wireless. So instead of it having more of that upright growth habit, it has more of a horizontal.
It goes a little wider.
And it gets about 20, 25 feet.
It's a cool tree, isn't it?
So cool tree. So, you know, that's one of those you might plant somewhere if you have utility lines over top that might prohibit.
Well, and we're going to say this all the time we talk about trees. Plant variety. You have to now. The days of just going to buy a bunch of ash trees, which everybody did 20 years ago, are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the days. Look at all the pear trees that line streets and driveways. And walkways, and they're everywhere, and you're not getting them anymore.
No.
So if you start losing them, you're not going to be able to replace them.
No, and you don't have that look anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really got ahead of ourselves back then.
We did.
Everybody rushed to plant those.
Well, they were fine. So the ash tree was a great tree. Don't get me wrong. The ash tree is a great tree.
Well, I'm talking about the pears.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but I think plant variety is very important.
Big time.
Big very,
time.
Very important. All right, you're up.
All right. Let's talk about the serviceberry.
Oh, I knew you were going
Autumn
there.
Brilliance. I say it all the time. That tree gives you year-round interest, and I love the berries.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fall color. You get bloom in the spring. A wonderful species. A native species. A woodland kind of species. Very tolerant of a lot of soil conditions. You can't go wrong. But look for one with nice structure when you make that purchase.
Do you like the single stem or do you like the multi-stem?
I'm a multi-stem guy.
Okay.
And the tree that you brought over, I got from you, the Armor Maple,
mm-hmm.
that multi-stem look, because as she starts to develop and grow, I'm going to limb her up, and I love that look.
Yeah.
I really do. What about you? You single stem, multi-stem?
I like the multi-stems, but you got to limb it up so you can see the stems.
Right.
Same thing with the... white fringe tree that we have. It's a multi-stem, so it has structural interest even in the winter.
Right.
You know, and it really is kind of a neat-looking tree.
You know, talking about multi-stem trees, I ran into one I saw at a visitation. Actually, it was up at Wittenstermer Funeral Home
mm-hmm.
up there in Delhi next to St. Dominic's.
Okay.
And when we, you know, I told you it was last show we were talking about some people that we lost this year. It was George Robbins' funeral. And I've never seen, that was the first time that I've seen a multi-stem rising sun, redbud.
Yeah. Really cool tree.
Yeah. Multi-stem. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I even like some of the multi-stem crab apples. You know, I've seen some of those. I just like that look.
And I think when you get them in a grouping, mm-hmm. two or three or five, do it in odd numbers.
Right.
3, 5, if you got the room.
Right.
But a wonderful, interesting look, to say the least.
Really makes a good focal point in the landscape.
That it does. Those are just some of our favorites, and we got to take another quick break. We can keep going and going and going. And if there's something that you have as a favorite in your landscape, certainly share that with us, and we'd love to hear from you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony Works. And when we come back, Barbara, we will touch base, and anybody else who's having some moss issues in the lawn, we'll tell you a couple things you can do and perhaps a remedy for that. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And again, if you're just joining us, good morning. Welcome. And a great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page. And we're going to try and get to that, too. We had a question on there about a critter that was giving somebody a fit indoors, and they could hear him chewing on some things down in the crawl space. Also, like us when you're on our Facebook page, and share some photographs with us on our Facebook page, things that you have going on around the house or in the landscape. Also, feel free to send us an email. We'll definitely get back to you at some point in time. It'll be just a day or two, so just bear with us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. And also, Alex is keeping up with our podcast. If you want to catch a past show, you can certainly do that as well. So there's three easy ways to stay in touch with us, in addition to the fourth, giving us a yell, 749-B105. And you just had a little roundup of our favorite trees, and we also said before we went into the break, we're going to touch base on mossy issues in the lawn, and Barbara did not want to go on the air, and that's okay, but Bob, tell me what you would do if you were going to go after anything that might be plaguing somebody from a moss standpoint.
Well, the very first thing we have to do with moss is we have to figure out what is causing us to have the problem. That is the very, before you do anything, before you waste your money, is it a low pH in your soil? Because maybe it is. Maybe you're very acid and you just need to bring the pH up and balance the soil. Lack of nutrients in the soil. Maybe it's just really needs, we need to add some compost. We need to kind of, we need to do some work to it to really enhance that. Poor drainage is usually a big one. Usually you're finding this in wet areas, mm-hmm. shady areas that stay moist. You know, that's typically where you're seeing the biggest problems. And then the fourth thing that really causes a lot of this excess shade. So those are our four main culprits. And there's others, but those are kind of the four probably main ones.
And here's what typically happens. There are products out there that you can pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries that will get rid of and eradicate the moss issue. And
you think
and
it does it forever?
No, it doesn't do it forever because going back to what you just said, too, you know, you got to find the root of the problem mm-hmm. or you're faced with it again. So those products that you see that's available, they contain products, you know, like iron sulfate and so forth, and they're beneficial in getting rid of it. But at the same token, you got to go back and get to the root of the cause. Aeration might be something you want to try and
yep.
do, a little bit of lime. But before you do any of the liming and all that other kind of stuff, I hear it all the time. People just want to use lime at free will, randomly, without truly knowing what their soil is comprised of. And, you know, this is a good time of the year. The ground's workable and pliable and allow it to dry out a little bit. But take a soil sample out to the extension office, your local yeah. extension office.
Send it off. Get it checked.
Find out what it's comprised of. You know, explain what the issues are at hand, and you'll get a very nice detailed report back telling you how to go about correcting the problem.
So let's analyze some of those. Let's just say that there is excessive or excessive shade.
Mm-hmm. I would first look at the, if it's, I don't know if it's structural from buildings.
Let's say it's trees.
Or secondly, if it's from trees, you know, I would have a certified arborist come in, somebody mm-hmm. who's ISA certified, not a hacker, okay?
Right.
But somebody, you know, I want to know, can we limb this tree up? Can we thin this tree out a little bit and get more light into the soil surface?
Right. And we don't like to take trees. We are tree people. But occasionally, taking the right tree out, say there's 10 trees there, sometimes if you see where the sun's coming from, you might be able to take one tree or even and then limb up a little bit and allow a lot more sunlight and airflow into that area, and that will eradicate the problem itself because then you can start to get rid of the moss, get some grass growing because you're getting enough sun, and that'll help a lot. So there are ways, but if there's excess shade, it's... If there's buildings, there's not much you can do with that. I mean, when the building's causing the shade, you're not going to move the
right.
building.
No, you're not going to move the
building. You know, but most of the time it's trees. And sometimes the trees are so thick, you're better off just to leave it and be happy you have moss. You have green.
And, you know, here's the other element, too. If it's a nice, large shade tree, and think about this, if it really blocks a lot of the sun and keeps your house cooler and your utility bills are a lot lower because your air conditioning unit doesn't have to run as often,
mm-hmm.
that's a plus. So don't always try and remedy those problems.
Right.
Sometimes what I like to do, if you can't beat them, I'm one of those kind of guys. Well, let's join them, and maybe let's go with something. Let's change that landscape up a little bit and plant things that are shade loving.
Right. So let's go into the next one. Poor drainage.
Poor drainage.
You know, there's ways to deal with that. It might be we're just a little light grading because there's probably trees around, but you know, a little light grading where we're not tearing up roots of trees or bringing in heavy equipment to compact the soil around the roots. But it might be a drain tile. Maybe you put a French drain in there to get the excess water out of there much quicker. That dries the soil out a little bit, and that may help as well. So if it's poor drainage, maybe we landscape it. Maybe we call Margie at Bushelman's and we say, hey, we need some creek rock and some boulders, and we're going to make this actually look like a dry creek through there. You know, we do something along those lines.
Aeration would be a benefit, too, when we talk about drainage. Open that up, get some oxygen to the top layer of the soil.
The clay's been compacted probably for years and years and years, so aeration would definitely be a good one. So, you know, the third one we talked about was maybe the nutrients in the soil. Well, that's actually pretty easy that you can deal with if you know what's in there. So first you got to do your soil sample. But, you know, you may be short on nitrogen. You may be short on lime. You may be, you know, we don't know. But and then you can take that information and you can actually start to treat that area so you can get the soil balanced.
You know, I say this all the time and liken, you know, when we talk about a soil sample, and it, to me it's really simple. If you think you have high blood pressure and you go to your doctor and they don't really take your blood pressure, how can they prescribe to you the medications to get it back in check? Your soil is the same way. If we don't get the sample and know what our soil is comprised of, we really do not know what we need to add or take away or what's in excess or what's lacking. So getting that soil sample is of the essence. And, you know, it's real simple, too. You want to go down about 4 to 6 inches, no more than 8, and get some of that soil from the side. And do a random sample. Don't just do it in one spot. Yeah. The more random samples, you know, that you have throughout the landscape or the lawn, the better the report's going to be. That's going to be a better average for
so
that.
You're saying don't just take one little core sample from one spot in the yard.
No.
Take multiple samples from the yard, mix them together.
Mix them together in a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Allow that to dry out. Don't put it into a plastic bag. Put it into a paper bag. Take it to the extension office. Do it early in the week because, for example, the extension offices over in Northern Kentucky, over in Campbell, Boone, and Kenton, they'll send that down to the University of Kentucky, and it's a free charge to those of us that live in the Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very fortunate with our extension services. I wish I knew a little bit more about those here in Ohio.
And Ohio County has one.
Because you work in Ohio, and that's where you guys are located, I know that you have a lot more to add about that than I do because I'm not.
They closed down Hamilton County's extension. If somebody's listening, they know, but I thought they did. But there is one out of Claremont County.
And here's the thing. You know, Hamilton County, it's not as rural as it used to be.
Right.
You know, so I guess going out into Claremont and the outer lying areas, that makes sense.
Right.
And I can understand that.
Yep.
But certainly get with your garden centers and your local nurseries and ask them for resources or people that they can contact or help you get that soil sample too.
You know, and this is going brings up another topic. You know, if you got a bunch of leaves sitting around, laying around, and it's keeping everything moist and wet, you know, if you can kind of sometimes rake some of those leaves off, if there's a lot of, like you've mowed, it's actually a spot where there's maybe a little more sunlight than you think, but maybe there's a lot of thatch and grass clippings in there. Sometimes the moss can attach to that. Sometimes you can get some growth from that. So removing some thatch, opening up the lawn, which goes back to kind of aeration as well, and dethatching, that sometimes can make it.
See, I like moss in an area of my landscape, just going right around the side, water will lay there just ever so slightly from my irrigation system.
Yep.
And it grows in between the rocks.
It looks good.
The robins love it. They're always pecking at it. But it's a cool look. And if I was trying to grow that moss, I can tell you I wouldn't be able to grow it.
Nope.
It's there on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, I like it. Keep growing.
And hopefully that helps. Hopefully that gives some people some information that they need to help combat some of the moss. But just go back, you got to know what you're getting into.
Definitely. And we got to take another break, unfortunately. We can just keep going and going and going. But when we come back, we had a great Facebook question the other day about something chewing in the crawl space. Critters, critters, critters.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. And again, joining me this morning is my good friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery, co-hosting alongside. And you know, this time of year, Bob, not only do we get cold and we want to get inside and stay warm, so do a lot of critters. And Faye DeZarn, this is a great way to stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, sent us a message the other day. I have this something in the crawl space of our house chewing really loud. And it doesn't always have to be in the crawl space. It could be in your attic. It could be maybe behind the wall. Mm-hmm. It must have a good set of teeth. I let my barn cats go under to see if they would catch it. No luck. You have any barn cats?
I do not.
Hey, go sick them, barn cats. No, I like that. I thought that was great. No luck. She has set mouse traps with no luck. They say that they see some tunneling in the yard, and they go right up to the house. Not knowing much about this kind of thing, she's puzzled. Can you please help me? Could it be one of those moles or whatever they are that makes those tunnels underground? Back when I was still mowing, the tunnels were big enough. I threw dirt all over my blades. Thank you. No one I ask seems to know anything, and I thought of you guys. I just know I would get some answers. Well, you're going to get some answers, that's for sure, Faye.
Whether they're right or not, I don't know.
Yeah, and, you know, Bob and I, you have to know something about us. If we don't know, we make it up.
No, we don't.
I'm kidding.
We do not.
But
you do.
This saying is, you call it the way you see it. If you don't see it, you make it up. But no, we do not. We'll
we
tell
don't.
You.
If we don't know, we'll tell you.
We didn't know about the white flux. We'll tell you.
We did not.
And every day is a school day. But anyway, my response was, I seriously doubt if it's moles.
Yeah, I don't
know. You know, they're underground for the most part, and that's where they winter, in deep burrows. But I would have to seem, and chime in anytime, Bob, you know, I first think of, you know, squirrels are very active this time of year, and
yep.
they have very sharp teeth, and they will gnaw and chew on some things that you will never suspect, and they are destructive.
Yes, they are.
So
underneath my office, my office is a barn, basically. We've created it, turned into an office.
And you don't have a barn cat?
So it's hollow underneath. And this summer, we had a couple skunks get underneath there. And they would make, I'm sitting there talking to customers, and they're just making noise like crazy. And we ended up having to trap them, and we did finally, and get rid of them. But they were under there, and they were making, I mean, so much noise. It was
really,
it was really unbelievable.
Could you hear any chewing activity?
Yes, it sounded like they were chewing on the floor underneath me.
Really? So it could be skunk activity?
It was. These were skunks.
Wow.
Raccoon.
Raccoon.
Chipmunks. Chip and Dale. Oh, Chip and Dale can make a mess. You know what I mean? No, but the chipmunks really can do a lot.
You know, I'm all about trapping. And, you know, you said something about skunks. You have to be very careful that you don't get sprayed.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is one foul odor.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they're mad.
But, you know, this could be a whole topic. But, you know, what's really serious about chewing type of critters, you know, for whatever reason, you know, especially mice, too, they'll chew on electrical wiring.
Sure they will.
And that's not a good situation to be in. And that's a potential fire hazard. So I would certainly have somebody professionally come out and take a look at that and trap. You know, bats are issues in the attic, mice in the attic, you know, raccoons in the attic. They get in underneath the eaves. And this is really important as a homeowner. Just when you mow the lawn in the summer months and spring and so forth, or any time, you know, just walk the perimeter of your house.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure that there aren't any, you know, anything that's out of the ordinary, any entry points for critters.
They can get in anywhere.
They can get in anywhere.
The afternoon, Amanda and Jesse, have you heard their stories?
Mm-mm.
Amanda had bats, and Jesse had a raccoon, got down, I think it was down his chimney, all the way down.
Now, I've heard of that. Now,
and they Facebook Lived him trying to get that out of there. It was hysterical.
Ooh.
But, you know, they're getting in their house. That's just two people that sit here every day.
And they want to stay warm, just like we do. So,
yeah,
you know, underneath our homes and the crawl spaces and attics and so forth, those are places of refuge for these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of any really good, certified, legitimate critter control companies or people or heard anybody using any of those types of services?
I have nobody that I personally can recommend. But I would love, I mean, let's face it, everybody needs it.
At some point in time. And then you have those people that really, even moles, when it comes to moles, they really, oh, I got to trap it. Then what do I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people don't feel comfortable with that. I respect that. I can understand that.
Sure.
But certainly if you're all in and your game, those have a hard traps.
I tell you what, when people see Mount Everest in their yard from the moles and from different things,
right,
they tend to change their mind occasionally when all of a sudden the yard is completely messed up.
Oh, no doubt.
It would change mine.
And every morning when I set a trap that next morning, that's the first thing I go and look at.
Yeah, you're all excited, aren't you?
Oh, I do. I get excited. Did I catch it?
You're like that kid on Christmas time. You're ready to go. The sheets come flying up, and you just go running downstairs, don't you? Run to the trap, don't you?
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Especially mole traps. And then I'm like that dog. You know, I got to bring it to the door and show Tina, hey, there he is.
Look what I found.
I got him. Another kill.
You know, you had something else on the Facebook page, too, on the pine tree.
Oh, yeah. Bring that up. Talk about it.
You did. So, you know, you put a picture out on Facebook, and it was, looked like, you know, a little growth on a pine tree.
When we get pine in for the winter months and we're working with it, what I'll find occasionally are praying mantis egg casings.
Yes.
And they're just these, it almost looks like gall.
It does look like a gall.
They're like about a size of a golf ball, kind of maybe a little irregular in shape. But those are friends. They're not
they are.
Foes.
They're good. They're good friends.
They're good guys.
You had a couple people who commented on it, nailed it right away. John nailed it right away, and Nick nailed it right away. And, you know, there were some others, Bill. And it was really great to see people commenting and figuring out what it was. But they're really good to have around because they take care of a lot of the bad insects.
And I'll keep them in a cool place, you know, during the winter months. And then I'll bring those branches out into the greenhouse when we're full of foliage, annuals and perennials and so forth, trees and shrubs. And sometimes it's not uncommon. I'm at the front counter and I'm ringing up a customer, and right there on the screen, I'll see a little baby praying mantis.
Just walking around.
Just walking around, just checking it out.
Changing colors.
Talking to my customers, trying to upsell.
Yeah, trying to get rid of any bug that you might have hanging in the greenhouse. Yeah, but if you go to the Facebook page, it makes it easy to spot. And you will recognize this every time you see it from now on. Because this one's not too hard to figure out what it is once you know what you're looking at.
Right.
This one's an easy one to identify.
Kind of fun. You know, and that's another, we were talking about gardening trends. That's another trend where people are gardening to help rejuvenate and recreate a better insect environment.
Sure.
Which is totally opposite than what most people used to think. We always wanted to get rid of insects.
Right.
But there are good insects and there are bad insects. But, you know, creating that type of a garden that attracts insects is very, very beneficial. We don't see them like we used to.
We talk about it all the time, about different trends and creating little habitats for butterflies or creating little areas for the bees. And, you know, let's face it, it just helps. It makes our environment better.
You know, the other day when you stopped by the garden center and we were prepping for the show this weekend, and you were talking about winter cleanup. And, you know, things are changing a little bit from perspective, you know, leaving some of that leaf litter and some of that leaf debris around where it protects overwintering insects. And you're going to say, Tony, gosh, I don't want to do that. I understand that, especially if you have, like, for example, bearded iris. You definitely want to keep those kind of areas cleaned up and free from leaf litter and so forth, because all of a sudden you'll have the iris borer issue. But sometimes, you know, there might be some truth to that. You know, think about this, too. What is one insect, a flying insect that we see at night in the summer months that is exciting to see and they light up the sky?
Oh, yeah.
The fireflies.
Fireflies.
The lightning bug. So interesting.
Yeah, and it's really neat to see. And I don't think you see as much as you used to.
I did this year, that's why I brought it up. This year I saw it, you know, more than I have in years past recently. For whatever reason, I don't know. I don't know if it has something to do with precipitation or any.
Oh,
you know,
I'm sure it does.
It's hard to say.
It's got to be something we'll have to look up and bring to the show. It'd be a fun topic.
It's just interesting. You know, we need to get an entomologist sometime in the show to talk about various things. And who is the professor, too? Another great topic would be the cicada. We have to be getting close to that cycle.
Well, you always have the yearly guys, right?
Yeah,
and then you have
the summer
big
cicadas.
Brood.
Yeah, there's a couple broods, I think.
Yeah, like 17 years.
They're on
some
the horizon.
We should be getting closer, I think.
I think we are. Is it Gretzky over at College of Mount St.
Joe? That's Wayne Gretzky. He plays
hockey. I'm not sure of his name. I did not mean to butcher it.
Okay.
But he's associated or affiliated with the college.
See, these are all the things that we're excited about 2019.
All the time.
And there's a lot of cool things coming on the horizon that you get to talk about.
Well, we're in the last half hour of the program, and we're going to take another quick break. And before we go into the break, I want to talk about something I want to bring back and get more people on the bandwagon and doing. And with the upcoming Christmas holiday, this is a great festive way to make the house and the table look warm and inviting. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
I love that song. That's one of my favorite Christmas songs.
I know you do. So what was this called?
The 12 Pains of Christmas. Hmm. I'm trying to rigging up the lights. And then at the end he said, fine, if you're so smart, you rig up the lights.
There you go.
I've said that.
I have to listen to it through its entirety. You've
never listened to the 12 Pains of Christmas?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's a great one.
No, but I will, Bob. Just for you.
Just for me?
I will.
And do it on the holiday season.
I'll do it on the holiday season.
Right.
So before we went into the break, and welcome back, by the way, there's something that it's a tradition that I used to see take place a lot more so years ago than I do today, and that is the Christmas centerpiece for the table or the buffet or their bureau. What a wonderful way to jazz up the table or bring that wonderful warm feeling into the house.
So what do you like to put in yours?
You know, I like a nice low kind of oval-shaped, long-shaped centerpiece with candles.
Yep.
Maybe some red roses or red carnations, some white daisy palms, various types of greens, maybe a little bit of seeded eucalyptus, pine cones, maybe some little ornament, small ornament balls.
Yep.
It's a festive look on the
table. My grandma used to do that all the time. We'd go to dinner on Christmas Eve, and the centerpiece would be perfect.
And it does. It's a nice, warming look. And, you know, I want to just encourage you to bring back the centerpiece. Make it a focal point on the table.
We have one now. Instead of the real candle, we have the fake one where you hit the remote control and it lights up and it looks like it's going. So
and you
my wife's done a good job.
And
with
you can fall asleep and not have to worry about burning anything down.
Exactly. Because I left my Christmas lights on this morning. I woke up today to come to the show at 4 and went, left the lights on all night.
That's not good.
Nope.
That's not safe, Bob.
Nope, but I can turn them off. They're good.
But, you know, contact your local florist and order one to be delivered or picked up on your way home from work. If you're visiting with somebody, take over a small centerpiece. They'll be very grateful that you did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, floral centerpieces, like I said, add a great touch and then create a warm, welcoming feeling inside the home during the Christmas season.
And you had some nice ones over there.
Yeah, we do a lot of centerpieces.
I know. That's you had some really nice ones when I was walking through.
A lot of centerpieces yesterday. It could just be greens. We had some beautiful white lilies added to it.
Even
a
little
of red.
Small poinsettia maybe in with it. What do you think?
Not quite with the floral oasis. You might be able to do like a little low basket or something with the poinsettia incorporated with maybe a lemon cypress or just some other small things or,
make it festive, right?
Yeah, make it festive, definitely. And these are some local florists that are in the Cincinnati area, and all of us that I'm going to mention are part of the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association and will provide you with the freshest and the best-looking centerpieces for your table. These are not in any particular order, but over on the west side of town in Cincinnati, Robbins Florist and Garden Center, they do a great job. They are part of the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association, as well as H.J. Binken Florist and Garden Center over in Silverton. Give those guys a call in the Cincinnati area or stop by there and just pick up a centerpiece for the holiday season. Over in Northern Kentucky, you have Jackson Florist and Garden Center, obviously. We do a lot of that kind of stuff. And my good friends, the Messmers, over at Fort Thomas Florist and Greenhouses, you can certainly pick up something over there if you're over in Campbell County. And over in Indiana, I haven't talked to the McCabes in a long time. Mike and Scott, Merry Christmas to all of you. McCabe's Greenhouse and Floral in Indiana. So all of us that I just mentioned are part of the Cincinnati Flower Growers Association and great entities, local businesses that will give you a fresh quality centerpiece for your table. Yes, make it festive.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's pretty. You walk in the house, maybe the candles are lit, the lights are down a little bit.
You smell some of the fresh greenery that's in the centerpiece.
Yeah, you don't have to do the fake plug-in version. You can have the real stuff.
And, you know, make sure you keep a little bit of water in it. They're in shallow containers. Mm-hmm. You know, don't overwater it. You don't want it to go out on a table.
Right.
But just a little bit of water. Take it over to the sink and just give it a drink. You know, keep that water full, and those greens will stay fresh for a while. And
there's still 3 days. So, I mean, you get that in the house now. Everybody will smell it. It'll smell nice by the time they get there.
You'll get the opportunity of enjoying it. Tell me a little bit about the when we come back out of the break, I want you to tell me a little bit about your little excursion last night.
Oh, yeah. It was a good time.
Good time. All right. 749-B105, in and around the house. Before we conclude our show, we're going to talk a little bit about some things you can do around town this weekend before the big day, Christmas. And maybe a couple last-minute gift-giving ideas for the gardener and the family. We'll be right back.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works and Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery, co-hosted the show with me this morning. We're getting ready to conclude our show. But before we do, Bob, you went on a little excursion last night.
I did. If anybody likes lights, Coney Island's Christmas Nights of Lights was really cool again last night. So, went last year, kind of made it a family tradition. So, you know, where they, I forget how many millions of lights that they have, but they have playing it to music as you're driving. It's a drive through. So, you're in your car. It's about $6 a person. I think it took about a half hour to get up to through the line that you're kind of weaving through to get to the display. You pay and then set your radio to a certain channel, and it plays music. And while it's playing the music, these lights are blinking all to the music, and they have all different songs on there. And it just really was really a neat display to see all the lights. And it took about 30 to 40 minutes just to drive through and see all the lights.
So is it $6 per person or per car?
$6 per person.
Per person.
Yeah, so which sounds like a lot, but it really was worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad got to see it for the first time. He didn't go with us in the past. So his was, and he's back there saying, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. It really is. It's neat. So
sounds like my dad. Once you get him there, it's like, yeah, like this is, I'm glad I came. This is really interesting. This is
really
nice. But
they've got three tunnels to drive through. Yeah. They have all kinds of lights. They've got, you know, it's
how long does it typically take you to?
It took about 30 to 40 minutes to drive through it. And you can go rain or shine because it was pouring down rain last night when we went through. I was going to get some pictures so we could put it on the Facebook page, but I was driving and trying to take pictures with it raining. And
you're not supposed to do that, Bob.
I did. Yeah, well, I didn't.
That's what I'm talking about.
I didn't do it. That's why you don't see pictures on Facebook. Well, no.
you said you were trying to drive and it was raining and take
pictures. Yeah, it just didn't work. So
you're not supposed to drive and get the phone out and take pictures.
That's why I wasn't doing it.
You don't want to rear end the person in front of you.
No, but you just follow cars and it's nice and slow. You can go kind of at your own pace. I mean, they don't want you to stop.
Right.
But there really is some cool features. And, you know, I think the zoo got voted the best festival of lights in the nation.
And congratulations, by the way.
Congratulations. Yeah, and the festival of lights is fantastic. I mean, we are just so lucky to have the zoo here.
Oh, it's a wonderful entity. And the botanical gardens. You know, it's not just, you know, the zoo itself, but they do a number of things over there.
Yep.
And the Crone Conservatory, another great place to spend a little bit of time. It's a great train display over there. And also, speaking of train displays, the one at the Museum Center, it looks totally different than it did when I was a kid at 4th and Main. It was bigger than life at 4th and Main for me. I could barely get up and see over, you know, through the plexiglass. My dad would have to lift me up and look over at the train display, but it was bigger than life and still a wonderful display to see all those old locomotives that were handmade. So
you and Tina like to do? Because we like to do like the, you know, Christmas nights.
We would like to have a day off. How's that? Yeah. That's what we would like. No, unfortunately, when we have the opportunity to take off a day, we do not take it off at the same time.
Yeah.
And we need to do that so we can go out and take part in some of these activities. You know, the other day I got up early and I headed north and, you know, I stopped at the Museum Center, went up to Duluth Trading, cut across 275, came back down and just made, you know, stopped at Kenwood and I stopped at Rookwood. And then my last stop was Crone Conservatory. And the day was coming to a head right there, but it was a great way to end my day. You know, that was...
You were up in, like, the Westchester area at Duluth Trading?
Yeah.
You didn't go to Top Golf?
I saw it. I saw it there. I don't think it was open.
Is it always open? Oh, well, not 24 hours, but it's open.
It was kind of cold out.
It doesn't matter. They got heaters.
I didn't see anybody hitting golf balls.
Oh, it's
but
fun.
That was a pretty interesting place.
I think I was there. It was 28 degrees. But with the infrared heaters that they have, it was fantastic.
That might be a good way to keep your golf swing in shape during the winter months.
Well, I got to get a golf swing first. Well, I can swing a club, but it's not called golf. I think they call it something else.
I've seen you swing. You know what? I've seen you hit some good shots.
Yeah.
I might have a shot or two out of a round of
18.
I think it's being consistent when it comes to that.
I spend more time in the sand than David Hasselhoff.
I never heard that one.
That was Happy Gilmore.
That is
the movie, Happy Gilmore.
That's right. Now that it's been a long time since I've seen Happy Gilmore. See, you always remember those sayings in movies.
I do. I'm kind of a nerd like that. I love Christmas Vacation, I can almost recite. Elf. I was listening to Elf yesterday, and I knew it was coming before he said it. You know, one of my favorite parts is when he's talking to the Santa that's in the mall, and he says, "You sit on a throne of lies." And then he said, "You smell like beef and cheese."
You like that? You like that smack?
I do. I think it's funny.
Slapstick comedy.
I do.
I can tell. Anything else that you can think of for the holiday season before we conclude our show this
morning?
Can
you believe it's Christmas is in 3 days.
I know. And I'm glad that we did not, that we did show up. We were thinking we were going to be.
Yeah, that was funny. So there was just a little mix up. We almost weren't here.
That would have been a big faux pas on my part.
Yeah, I was blaming you the whole time. So
that's what Tony said. And Tony was incorrect.
I totally blamed you. It was great.
Thank you. I'm glad that you blamed me.
Yeah.
All right. Merry Christmas to everyone. Happy New Year. And we will be out next week, the 29th, for sure. So we know that for a fact. We were we got that all straightened out. Mm-hmm. And we will be back on the 5th. And we have a lot of new, interesting things to bring you for the 2019 season. Merry Christmas, Bob. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Alex, the same to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Tony, and your family.
We'll talk to you in the new year.
You're listening to In and Around the House on B105 WUBE Cincinnati.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.